The content of this program is intended for print and visually impaired audience. Hello, my name is Kenny Yee from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will share with you from the 2016 targets and monitoring work provided by Disability Rights North Carolina. Each year, Disability Rights North Carolina adopts a plan to focus its work on the largest threats to the independence of people with disabilities and the most prevalent violations of disability rights laws. The plan includes target areas for our work. We developed the 2016 targets based on information from our staff obtained during the listening sessions held across the state from January through May 2015, from responses to the online survey in July, from people who call our office for assistance, and from other disability rights advocates. 2016 targets and monitoring work. There's a blurb that says, ensure that infants and toddlers, parentheses birth to three, close parentheses, have access to appropriate services within the required timelines. The subsection asks, who benefits? Infants and toddlers with disabilities birth to three who may qualify for the early intervention services under Part C of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, but have been denied an evaluation and or subsequent services due to child fine violations. The subsection says, what we will accomplish in 2016. First bullet, perform outreach and gather information from organizations such as the Child Development Services agencies across the state, the Family Support Network, local interagency coordinating councils, as well as the Exceptional Children's Assistance Center and the NC Council on Development Disabilities regarding the provision of early intervention services for eligible infants and toddlers. The second bullet, perform outreach with NCDHHS, Division of Public Health regarding compliance with federal requirements under Part C of IDEA. And the third bullet, represent individual clients on child fine violations related to identification, location, evaluation, and provision of early intervention services. The subsection asks, why is this important? Part C of the IDEA mandates that each state provide early intervention services to all children birth to age 3 with developmental disabilities. Early intervention for these children is critical to their development and learning. Research documents that children who are not ready to learn in kindergarten are more likely to perform poorly in school, have more behavioral issues, engage in criminal activities, and suffer from depression. With substantial budget cuts, the elimination of staff positions, the inability to fill current staff positions, and threatened eligibility restrictions, the state of North Carolina is in jeopardy of being unable to fulfill the promise of early intervention services to these children. However, the state's obligation to provide early intervention services to all eligible infants and toddlers cannot be circumvented because of budget cuts. Early intervention services create the foundation for the future success of infants and toddlers with disabilities. Our advocacy efforts will mean the difference between whether individual infants and toddlers are identified, located, evaluated, and provided with early intervention services or are denied needed evaluations and services. For these reasons, Disability Rights NC seeks to ensure that North Carolina fulfills its responsibilities to all eligible children under Part C of the IDEA. Funding, PAIDD. The next blurb says, keep students with disabilities in school. Who benefits? Students with disabilities who are excluded from school for reasons related to their disability will directly benefit from our representation, advocacy, and technical assistance. Students with disabilities across the state will benefit indirectly from our individual cases and from our publications, trainings, monitoring, possible systemic remedies, and participation in NC Department of Public Instruction Exceptional Children's Division stakeholder groups. The population served by this target is frequently poor, rural minority students across the state because schools with those characteristics are more likely to suspend and exclude students with disabilities and not provide required services because of more limited resources than schools in higher wealth areas, and families with those characteristics have more limited access to services and resources that support self-advocacy. What we will accomplish in 2016. The first bullet, provide legal representation, advocacy, or technical assistance for 40 individual students with disabilities who have been suspended or otherwise excluded from school because of their disabilities to secure their return to school, obtain appropriate compensatory education, special education services, and behavior intervention plans, and reduce the likelihood of future exclusion from school. The second bullet, pursue legal remedies that deter widespread use of suspensions and other exclusionary practices for students with disabilities. The third bullet, publish 10 articles or presentations in visual or auditory format to educate people with disabilities, parents, school personnel, policymakers, attorneys, and interested persons about special education and school discipline law. The fourth bullet, provide 6 trainings to juvenile court counselors, parents, advocates, attorneys, and or interested stakeholders about special education and school discipline law. And the final fifth bullet, participate in 2 Department of Public Instruction Exceptional Children's Division stakeholder groups for 1, planning mental health services and programming in public schools, and 2, providing input for EC division policy and practice changes, including statewide changes to IEP forms and the Parents' Rights Handbook. Why is this important? Students with disabilities are excluded from school more often than students without disabilities through suspensions, homebound placements, modified day schedules, and other exclusionary practices. These exclusions often result in months and sometimes years of lost instructional time. In North Carolina in 2013, over 35% of the long-term suspensions and removals to alternative schools were given to students with disabilities, yet students with disabilities comprise less than 13% of the total student population. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, or IDEA, includes protections from school exclusion for students with disabilities. Except for acts involving weapons, drugs, or serious bodily injury, IDEA prohibits schools from suspending a student for longer than 10 days if the conduct was related to his or her disability or caused by the school's failure to follow the student's Individualized Education Plan, or IEP. Even when the IEP team finds that the conduct is unrelated to the student's disability and the suspension stands, the school must continue providing the special education services in the IEP during the suspension. IEP teams also must address the student's behavior through a Behavior Intervention Plan, or BIP, to help prevent recurrence, regardless of whether the conduct is found to be a manifestation of the student's disability. Still, students with disabilities with behavior challenges often are placed on homebound and modified day schedules, sent home from school before the end of the day, or are otherwise removed from the educational setting before appropriate behavioral interventions are attempted. These students are constructively suspended from school. These practices occur despite IDEA's prohibition on suspending students for behaviors related to their disabilities, and despite its mandate that schools appropriately educate students with disabilities, regardless of the severity of their disability, behaviors, or the services they require to make progress. Funding, PAIDD, PAIR, and IOLTA. And there's a section called funding acronyms. The funding for most of our work comes from 7 federal grants and 1 grant from the NC State Bar. The grant amounts in fiscal year 2015 ranged from $33,966 to $1,101,546. Each year, we carefully plan the expenditure of the grant funds across the targets and our investigations and monitoring work. IOLTA stands for North Carolina State Bar Plan for Interest on Lawyers' Trust Accounts. PAAT, Protection and Advocacy for Assistive Technology. PABSS, Protection and Advocacy for Beneficiaries of Social Security. PAIDD, Protection and Advocacy for Individuals with Developmental Disabilities. PAIMI, Protection and Advocacy for Individuals with Mental Illness. PAIR, Protection and Advocacy for Individual Rights. PATBI, Protection and Advocacy for Traumatic Brain Injury. And PAVA, Protection and Advocacy for Voting Access. This next blurb says, ensure appropriate transition planning for meaningful post-secondary outcomes for students with disabilities. Who benefits? Students age 14 and over with IEPs who are not receiving appropriate transition services will directly benefit from our representation, advocacy, and technical assistance. Students across the state who qualify for transition services will benefit indirectly from our individual cases and our publications, presentations, and DPI stakeholder group involvement. The population served by this target is frequently poor, rural, minority students across the state because students in those demographics have less access to resources that support self-advocacy in securing appropriate transition services, often attend schools with more limited resources that do not prioritize such services, and live in resource-deprived communities that struggle to support adequate post-secondary opportunities for people with disabilities. What we will accomplish in 2016. The first bullet point says, provide legal representation, advocacy, or technical assistance for 30 individual students age 14 and over with IEPs who are not receiving appropriate transition services to secure appropriate services, compensatory services, and increase the likelihood of meaningful post-secondary outcomes for students with disabilities. The next bullet point says, investigate and, if appropriate, pursue systemic legal remedies that require school systems statewide to uphold IDEA's transition services requirements. The next bullet point says, publish and widely distribute a transition services handbook for students, parents, school personnel, Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, or VR, personnel, policymakers, and other stakeholders about IDEA's transition requirements and locally available resources to facilitate transitions and meaningful post-secondary opportunities. The next bullet point says, publish 2 articles or presentations in visual or auditory formats about IDEA's transition requirements for use on our website and education-specific media. The final bullet point says, participate in Department of Public Instruction, Exceptional Children's Division stakeholder groups to provide input into state policy affecting transition services. Why is this important? The IDEA requires schools to begin providing transition services to students with IEPs no later than age 14. IDEA defines transition services as a coordinated set of activities focused on improving the academic and functional achievement of the student to facilitate the transition to post-school activities. Transition services must be based upon the student's individual needs and include instruction, related services, community experiences, daily living skills, vocational evaluations, and employment and other post-school goals. This target allows us to provide representation, advocacy, and technical assistance to students who are not receiving transition services as required by IDEA. We encounter repeated violations of IDEA's transition requirements when we attend IEP meetings on behalf of clients, provide self-advocacy and technical assistance to parents, and collaborate with coalition and advocacy groups who also work on behalf of students with disabilities. Department of Labor statistics shows that people with disabilities have the highest rate of unemployment of any group. Post-secondary outcomes for students with disabilities improve when quality transition planning, evaluations, and services are available, timely and appropriate. Our advocacy efforts persuade IEP teams and VR personnel to provide the training and support required by the IDEA that students need to achieve meaningful post-secondary outcomes to combat poverty, illiteracy, and unemployment. Funding is provided by PAIDD, PAIR, and PABSS. The next goal is advocate for the employment of people with disabilities in competitive, integrated jobs. Who benefits? Individuals who desire to work, including those who live in an area where segregated sub-minimum wage work is the predominantly available employment option. Our role in this transformation will be to continue our efforts to establish legal principles that create a more favorable work environment for and increase the workforce participation levels of people with disabilities in North Carolina. When public funding shifts towards employment services that incentivize independence and economic self-sufficiency, we expect to see a decrease in the numbers of people with disabilities living in poverty. What we will accomplish in 2016. The first bullet point says, provide rights-based individual advocacy services to 35 individuals not currently in a sheltered workshop who are seeking or trying to maintain competitive integrated employment. The second bullet point says, conduct in-reach regarding employment rights and resources of people with disabilities at 5 segregated facilities paying sub-minimum wages. The next bullet point says, provide individual advocacy services to 10 individuals currently in a segregated day program or workshop who would desire competitive integrated employment. And the final bullet point says, establish relationships with stakeholders, including local workforce development boards, transition staff within school systems, and other advocates for the employment of people with disabilities located in the same counties as the segregated facilities targeted for in-reach. Why is this important? Of those who identify themselves as a member of the competitive workforce, many people with disabilities face barriers to finding work and staying on the job. We have heard from countless workers and their service providers that workers are deliberately limiting the hours worked and the wages earned to avoid jeopardizing SSDI and/or SSI benefits. sheltered work and the subminimum wage continues to be the only option for many working-age people with disabilities. As a result, people with disabilities in North Carolina are twice as likely to live in poverty as their non-disabled peers. Competitive wages are necessary to build assets and form the basis of a personal safety net in the form of economic stability. When individuals achieve financial independence, they have the power to decide where to live, play, and otherwise participate in the community of their choice. Funding is provided by PAIDD, PAIR, PATBI, PABSS, and PAAT. The next goal is listed as promote the right of self-determination. Who benefits? North Carolinians under guardianship will benefit from improvements in the exercise of guardianship. But the goal is for many more to avoid ever being placed under guardianship. There is reason to believe that people of color are overrepresented among those with public guardians, but more data is required to clarify this point. Voters in facilities will benefit directly from improved multipartisan assistant team, or MAT, procedures. All voters with disabilities facing difficulty voting will benefit from an improved accommodation/modification request process. What we will accomplish in 2016. The first bullet point, produce a report on potential improvements in our existing guardianship system addressing both factors leading to inappropriate acts by guardians, including abuse and neglect, and factors leading to an over-reliance on guardianship. The second bullet point, continue to engage with stakeholders convened by the NCDHHS Division of Aging and Adult Services, or DAAS, to provide statewide recommendations to implement supported decision-making and or other less restrictive alternatives to guardianship. Continue to monitor the MAT implementation process and systemic advocacy to improve training and guidance to local boards, and offering MATs will improve the registration and voting rates of voters living in facilities. Revisit the role of the State Board of Elections and NCDHHS in implementing the National Voting Rights Act with respect to voters receiving services through our behavioral health managed care system, with the goal of seeing a policy directive from NCDHHS to behavioral health contractors. Why is this important? Self-determination, the ability to make decisions and take actions to shape one's own life, is fundamental to our purpose as the protection and advocacy system for North Carolina. The concept runs through much of our work, from the ability to choose what provider will come into your home, to participating in the development of an IEP, to seeking vocational education or employment. Two discrete ways in which self-determination plays out in the lives of people with disabilities that are not addressed through our work under other targets are in guardianship and voting. Guardianship, which allows for the substitution of one person's decision-making for another, can be the most egregious denial of self-determination. And in a social context, voting is the most basic way to express our individual wishes in public life. We combine these two pieces of our work because they stem from self-determination. People under guardianship lose the power to control the most fundamental decisions about their lives. Disproportionately, people with disabilities who have institutional or public guardians are relegated to institutional living, subjected to unnecessary restrictions on their freedoms, and subjected to neglect. The current system of guardianship must be reformed to promote self-determination. Disability Rights NC regularly confronts the negative consequences of individuals placed under guardianships that are more restrictive than necessary. This includes situations where individuals may require some support with decision-making but are placed under full guardianship because limited guardianship and other decision-making supports were never considered. Those who try to have their competency restored face an uphill battle navigating the court process. We see cases where individuals prefer to live in the community and are capable of doing so, but are institutionalized because it is their guardian's preference. Increasingly, public guardians are viewed by service providers as a resource for case management for people being discharged from community hospitals and other settings. Public guardians, confronted with trying to meet needs that were previously met by the behavioral health system, look to institutional placements as the answer. Throughout the United States, we find that there is a significant gap between the participation rates of voters who have disabilities and voters without disabilities. While this is a significant national issue, North Carolina has reached more than double the national gap. In 2008, only 55% of people with disabilities voted in our state. Because voting is the first step in community integration, it is imperative that we work on voting accessibility for individuals who have disabilities. Through this target, we will work to decrease the voter gap by increasing voter registrations as well as civic engagement among people with disabilities. As the statewide dialogue on guardianship has evolved over the last few years, Disability Rights NC has emerged as a consistent and reasonable voice for limiting unnecessary government interference and promoting appropriate supports in the lives of people with disabilities. As always, this runs the risk of alienating those whose frustration with inadequate supports for people with disabilities leads them to support approaches that favor safety over independence. This work presents opportunities to strengthen partnerships with other stakeholders with whom we are generally aligned but have not actively collaborated. By continuing our voting accessibility work, we will continue to strengthen our relationship with both the state and local boards of elections, and we can work with facilities to encourage support for their residents' participation in the election process. Funding is provided by PAIDD, PAVA, and PAIMI. The next goal is enforce the right of people with disabilities to have equal access to their community and to fair housing. Who benefits? Individuals with disabilities who have been denied equal access to public places, programs, or services, including public transportation and public housing. Homeowners whose Homeowners Association, HOA, refused to provide a reasonable accommodation or otherwise discriminated against them. Students who have been denied auxiliary aids and services by places of higher education, and individuals who use service animals. What we will accomplish in 2016. The first bullet, provide rights-based individual advocacy to 35 individuals being denied equal access by public entities in places of public accommodation. Provide rights-based individual advocacy to 10 individuals denied fair housing. Advance or resolve ongoing cases seeking to end discrimination in the DMV Medical Review Program, ensure access to health care while accompanied by a service animal, and accessible course content in higher education. Monitor the state's implementation of the ADA/Rehabilitation Act grievance procedure. Why is this important? People with disabilities are regularly denied full and equal access to the goods and services offered in their community. Access to transportation and housing are particularly significant and difficult to overcome. Barriers to living independent, fully integrated lives in the communities of one's choice. 25 years after the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, people with disabilities continue to be denied access in their community. Transitioning individuals to community living cannot be achieved if people with disabilities are denied equal access to the community of their choice. Pursuing equal access cases provides us an avenue to request attorney fees for our work, which provides us with additional resources to grow our equal access enforcement. Potential risks are the possibility that we cannot demonstrate specific systemic changes in any given year, and the possible perception that access issues are less pressing than issues related to physical and mental health and welfare. Very few private attorneys in North Carolina handle Title II or Title III cases, and most state and local government agencies do not have federally required ADA coordinators, leaving a void in enforcement outside of Disability Rights NC. Funding is provided by PABSS, PAIR, PAAT, and PAIDD. The next goal is promote that children and adolescents between the ages of birth to 21 with complex mental health needs and co-occurring intellectual and or developmental disabilities receive medically necessary, high-fidelity, community-based mental health services and supports in their homes, family setting, or the most home-like setting appropriate to their needs. Who benefits? All Medicaid-eligible children and adolescents under the age of 21 who have complex mental health needs and co-occurring intellectual and or developmental disorders who are having problems accessing or have been denied medically necessary mental health services to keep them in the community and out of institutions. What we will accomplish in 2016. The first point, provide technical assistance, self-advocacy assistance, advocacy, and direct representation to 50 children and adolescents with dual diagnoses who have been denied the medically necessary services to treat their physical and or mental illness and other medical conditions. The second point, convene work group meetings and press forward the completion of the four items outlined in the demand letter to NCDHHS. And here are those four demands. Assign to each case a case manager who can ferret out facts and link enrollees to medically necessary resources as outlined in the DHHS LME MCO contracts. assign an ombudsman at the state level who can monitor the cases and resolve issues when there seems to be an impasse in solutions between providers, parents, and LME/MCOs, expand NC Start to children, and establish and obtain in-state expertise in psychopharmacological consultation and experienced leaders to assist the LME/MCOs with developing community services for those with dual diagnosis services. And then the final point, provide training and outreach to families and community stakeholders. Why is this important? Parents of children with dual diagnoses, mental illnesses, and intellectual or developmental disabilities struggle to find the appropriate mix of services to care for their children in North Carolina. For these children, mental health services and supports and intellectual disability services and supports are mutually exclusive. In many cases, the few mental health services are time-limited, and the intellectual or developmental disability services are waitlisted. This population struggles to find providers who are willing to serve them and who will apply a holistic approach to their treatment. Even when the appropriate mix of services are recommended by their child and family teams, the Utilization Management Department at the Managed Care Organizations, or MCOs, very often deny the request. Because of these barriers, most of this population cycle in and out of institutions in the state, acute care units, and out-of-state institutions far away from their homes. These children need services and support to meet their individualized need to stay in the community. We have been providing individual advocacy and legal representation to this population since 2007, which resulted in successful outcomes for many individual cases, but the systemic problem still exists. The plight of this population is a growing problem, one that is unlikely to abate in the near future. Funding is provided by PAIMI and PAIDD. The next goal has 2 points. Number one, advance the right of people with disabilities to community-based services and supports that allow them to remain in their homes and community settings. And number two, help people with disabilities transition out of institutions into the least restrictive community setting appropriate to their needs. Who benefits? People with disabilities who require a wide range of services necessary to live in the community. Number one, people with disabilities in integrated community settings who receive inadequate services / treatment, putting them at a significant risk of institutionalization. And number two, people with disabilities in institutions who could be served more appropriately in home and community-based settings. What we will accomplish in 2016. Point one, provide advocacy to 50 individuals who are not receiving appropriate services or services in the most integrated setting. Point two, address systemic issues that we uncover through litigation or other forms of advocacy. Number three, monitor the legislative process and continue discussions with NCDHHS to improve the service delivery system. And point four, monitor the DOJ settlement as well as the PASHB and LS settlement agreements for compliance and effectiveness. Why is this important? Many people with disabilities are being denied their rights to access appropriate community-based services. Too often, people with disabilities who could successfully live in the community with sufficient services and supports are forced into institutional settings in violation of their right to receive services in the least restrictive environment under the Americans with Disabilities Act and the Olmstead decision. Individuals with significant disabilities cycle in and out of institutions due to gaps in North Carolina's publicly funded I/DDMHSAS service delivery system. The system is biased towards institutionalization when many individuals could be served with the appropriate home and community-based services. Disability Rights NC has found that this bias persists primarily because of an inadequate provider network and the failure of the state to proactively enforce federal, state, and contractual obligations of the LME/MCOs that operate the behavioral health system. Funding provided by PAIDD, PAIMI, PAIR, and PATBI. The next goal is listed as investigate and report on the safety of people with mental illness admitted to our jails. Who benefits? The beneficiaries of this target will be people who with mental illness who become confined in North Carolina jails and their families, sheriffs, people who work in the jails, and the communities. What we will accomplish in 2016. Bullet 1. Issue a report which will promote meaningful collaboration between the LME/MCOs and the jails in their catchment areas. Increase services and supports for people with mental illness while in jail and upon discharge to the community, and ensure there are robust and effective suicide prevention programs in all North Carolina jails. Point 2. Ensure that our jails have robust and effective screening and suicide prevention programs. The report will examine the cause of the high suicide rate of North Carolina jail inmates, which is higher than the national average. The information will be gathered and compiled to educate jail personnel, LME/MCOs, policymakers, and others about suicide prevention and response. Why is this important? Jails are neither designed nor funded to provide mental health treatment, but the erosion of public mental health services is causing the jails to become de facto mental health facilities. Detention facilities are not equipped to provide the support and services that this population needs. Without appropriate treatment, inmates with mental illness decompensate, are vulnerable to abuse, and are disproportionately segregated in solitary confinement. The failure to implement effective policies and support systems for people with mental illness in our jails has very serious consequences beyond recidivism. Tragically, suicides are common occurrences in North Carolina jails. Our preliminary research indicates suicide is the leading cause of death in NC jail inmates. From January 1, 2013 through June 30, 2015, there were at least 58 deaths in North Carolina jails. At least 26 of the deaths, which is 44.8%, were the result of suicide. Sadly, this number is higher than the national average, 31.3% in 2012. Currently, there is nationwide attention on the plight of people with mental illness in jails. The law is clear that every person in jail with a serious medical need has a right to appropriate medical care, including persons with serious mental illness. Our work will address a gap in accountability and increase access to services for a population whose needs are acknowledged but largely unaddressed by NC's mental health service delivery system. We will tackle abuse of a vulnerable sector of our citizens who are institutionalized and closed off from mainstream society. And the funding for that is provided by PAIMI. The next target is ensure appropriate treatment for people with mental illness in North Carolina prisons. Who benefits? People with mental illness in prison who are not receiving appropriate treatment. As of December 31, 2014, there were nearly 38,000 people incarcerated in NC prisons. 20% of these people likely need mental health treatment. What we will accomplish in 2016. Using our protection and advocacy system authority, we will... Point 1. Monitor inmates with severe mental illness and long-term segregation. Point 2. Monitor any disciplinary actions against inmates for manifestations of their disabilities. Point 3. Ensure that inmates with mental illness and high custody classifications receive treatment. Point 4. Ensure adequate clinical staff are in facilities. And point 5. Promote basic policies fundamental to a prison mental health system, such as a suicide prevention policy implementing the CIT training in a way to assure systems change and sustainability. Why is this important? Since 2001, North Carolina's fractured community mental health system has resulted in an increased admission of people with mental illness into our prison system. Today, there are more North Carolinians with severe mental illness in our prisons and jails than in our psychiatric hospitals. For people with mental illness in prison, the outcome is usually harmful. Sometimes, sadly, it is tragic. Disability Rights NC has identified significant deficiencies in our prison mental health service system, resulting in ongoing harm to people with mental illness. Changes to the way North Carolina cares for and treats inmates with mental illness requires a shift in the culture of a large state agency and affects every part of the prison organization, prison officials, clinicians, correctional officers, and staff. It requires change in the mission of NC Department of Public Safety, DPS, and how inmates are managed on a daily and hourly basis. Policies and procedures must be changed and new policies successfully implemented. Enthusiastic, effective leadership will be critical. Successful recruitment and retention of clinicians will be fundamental to success. Finally, sufficient resources, funds, must be allocated to NCDPS to achieve a level of constitutionally adequate care. Funding is provided by PAIMI. The next target is keep people safe in facilities through monitoring efforts. Who benefits? Hundreds of people with disabilities living in facilities whose rights must be identified and protected to ensure they are safe and free from abuse, neglect, or exploitation. What we will accomplish in 2016. Point 1. Monitor at 12 facilities, 2 of which are large adult care homes and 10 of which are state-operated facilities. The state-operated facilities include 3 psychiatric hospitals, 3 intermediate care facilities for individuals with I/DD, 2 neuromedical centers, also known as nursing homes, and 2 residential schools for students who are deaf. Point 2. Regularly attend the Human Rights Committee or Residence Rights Council meetings at each of these facilities with dual purposes of empowering committee/council members and their work, and in the case of state-operated facilities, to hear executive and advocacy staff report on their work for the previous month so that it may inform our work moving forward. And the third point, monitor at specific state-operated facilities based upon particular needs we have identified at each of these facilities. Some examples of this individualized focused work in specific facilities include decrease the use of restraint and seclusion through promotion and of trauma-informed care and person-centered approaches that include addressing communication needs as a means to prevent behavioral crises. Promote the development of resources, training, and outreach to substantially increase the facility's efforts to transition residents into homes in their chosen communities. Monitor for the inappropriate illegal use of restraints to ensure patients are kept safe and the facility understands the appropriate and legal ways in which restraint can be used. Ensure patients on a specific facility's deaf unit are able to fully access communication devices in a way that protects their rights to privacy/confidentiality. Ensure the state is implementing discharge efforts in accordance with its settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice. Ensure staff are strictly following supervision requirements of residents as ordered by the resident's physician and that the supervision is reflected in the individual's treatment plan. Ensure patients have access to their bedrooms and belongings by stopping the routine locking of patient bedrooms from 3 to 8 p.m. on weekdays. Ensure the state does its job in regulatory oversight, and ensure students fully understand their rights, both while in school and after they graduate, and transition from school into the community. Why is this important? Along with conducting investigations, monitoring is a core function of a protection and advocacy system. Consistent with our federal mandate, Disability Rights NC monitors facilities where people with disabilities live or receive services in order to prevent, detect, and address instances of abuse, neglect, or exploitation. We also want to ensure appropriate services are provided, that the environment is safe for the individuals, and that individuals are provided opportunities to participate in activities and work that is important to them. Finally, we want to identify people who could live in the community if they had the proper supports. In short, we monitor to ensure compliance with respect to the rights and safety of residents. Funding provided by PAIDD, PAIMI, PAIR, and PATBI. And the final target of this issue, keep people safe in facilities by investigating allegations of abuse, neglect, and deaths. Who benefits? Hundreds of people with disabilities living in facilities whose rights must be identified and protected to ensure they are safe and free from abuse, neglect, or exploitation. What we will accomplish in 2016. Investigations in facilities are opened in response to specific reports of abuse, neglect, and/or death in a specific facility. Each year, we investigate as many reports as our resources will allow. We use the following criteria to determine which reports we will investigate. Nature and pervasiveness of the problem, including its location, whether there is a death or serious injury, what triggered the allegation, how long it has persisted, the impact on other people with disabilities in the same or similar environments, whether the problem is indicative of a larger systemic problem affecting many people with disabilities, and whether accepting the case for investigation prevents the opportunity for systems reform. Description of the individuals about whom the allegations are made, and final bullet point, whether this is primary or secondary investigation, potential policy and violations and implications, and the potential relief sought. Why is this important? Along with monitoring, conducting investigations is a core function of a protection and advocacy system. The protection and advocacy system was created in the 1970s as a result of systemic, horrific abuse and neglect of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in a New York state-operated facility called Willowbrook. People with disabilities who live in facilities are particularly vulnerable to the risks of abuse and/or neglect. The continuation of cuts in services in the community results in more institutionalization of people with disabilities at a time when providers are paid less for those services. This impacts both the quality and level of care that is provided to residents of these facilities, increasing the risks of abuse and neglect. Our monitoring efforts can and do reveal the need to conduct investigations, but we also initiate investigations based on complaints we receive. This means investigations are more reactionary, providing us less ability to predict or control the work except by adjusting and modifying other investigations and other teamwork so that we can take on the extremely compelling cases even when we are at full capacity. Our consideration of whether to undertake an investigation always involves a deliberative review of whether any possible outcome will result in systemic change on behalf of people with disabilities. Funding is provided by PAIDD, PAIMI, PAIR, and PATBI. We've run out of time for today's episode of On Target. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kenny Yee for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for the print and visually impaired audience. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138.